This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 in the morning, you are listening to The Morning Run with Xiaoning, Philip, and myself, Shazana. Now, though, we're turning our attention to investment strategies around the world, and the EU appears to be flexing its investment muscles after it unveiled the Global Gateway Program worth 300 billion euros last week. Now, the aim of the program is to help global recovery by mobilizing investments in digital, clean energy and transport networks, as well as boosting health, education and research systems across the world.
It will be financed by a mix of grants and investments from member states, their development banks, the private sector, and EU financing bodies, including the European Investment Bank. Now, the program has been described as a true alternative to China's Belt and Road Initiative, which had been accused of leaving some countries stuck with huge debts. So the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said that EU wanted to show that a different democratic approach could deliver on projects that focus on sustainable development for developing countries.
Okay, so to get a better idea of what this Global Gateway program is about and the impact it might actually have, we speak to Dr. Friedrich Klein from the Center for Multilateralism Studies at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Thanks for joining us, Friedrich. Good morning. The EU last week announced its Global Gateway Infrastructure Development Program, valued at 300 billion euros, as mentioned. Why is the EU embarking on this? What is it looking to achieve?
So it has announced the Global Gateway on Wednesday, but what it essentially is doing, and some critics have pointed this out, is that they are repackaging schemes that are already ongoing. So it's not that they are launching a whole slew of new infrastructure investment projects, but they're actually framing a strategy now for already ongoing or planned infrastructure investment projects across the globe, really in the developing world. What they are hoping to achieve with this is better synchronizing what they call the Team Europe approach, right? Mobilizing financial resources really from across the European Union. So by including all the ongoing various different infrastructure investment projects the EU has, quite extensive ones, you kind of synergize and centralize them in Brussels. And of course, by tapping into member states and various funding mechanisms the EU has, you also mobilize significant greater resources, of course.
You know, the G7, led by the US, has also come up with an infrastructure program called Build Back Better World. And these plans are designed to counter China's Belt and Road Initiative. You know, based on what we know, how do these two initiatives compare to BRI?
Yeah, correct. So I would probably put a question mark behind this counter act, but perhaps we get a later stage to discuss this. Like regarding your specific question, I would say that the Global Gateway, and it has been actually framed as a complement to this G7 initiative, right, is significantly smaller in volume than the Build Back Better initiative and also the BRI anyway, right? So we're talking about entirely different financial volumes, of course. But yes, I mean, you're correct, but it's no coincidence that the Global Gateway announcement follows pretty much right after the G7 announcement, right? These two projects are supposed to synergize. And indeed, it is kind of unfortunately being pitched against the Belt and Road Initiative, which I personally think is not exactly helpful. But yeah, so we're talking about significantly smaller amounts. But from an investment mobilization perspective, the main difference is really that both Western initiatives really try to, if you want to put it like Western initiatives vis-a-vis China, try to mobilize or rather tap into private funding a lot more than the BRI does, right? As your listeners will know, the BRI is predominantly financed by Chinese state-owned lending, public and private lending. So this is quite a significant difference, whereas the quote-unquote Western approach is rather mobilizing some public funding in order to kind of stimulate private investment to a much greater extent.
Now, China's BRI has been accused of leaving countries with huge debt since its inception in 2013. And there has been a lot of media coverage on this so-called Chinese debt threat. So will the Global Gateway initiatives be different?
You're completely right by saying that the media is kind of focusing on this, and this, it clearly is very sexy. And the debt trap argument has been used quite often. But I would not want to pass judgment on whether this is actually correct or not. There have been quite a few counter arguments and quite solid counter arguments against this debt trap allegation. So the question is really, is there this big debt trap master plan behind the BRI? I personally would think not. Nonetheless, there have been some, let's say, unhealthy levels of debt in certain countries. Sri Lanka, of course, is one, but you could name many others. Laos is going down that route now as well. So the question really is here, whether that's intentional or not. And I would say probably not. A fault of the BRI perhaps is that they tend to not conduct very thorough feasibility studies that include both like ecological feasibility studies, but also financial feasibility studies in the host country, right? And I think this is something the European Union, with its, as much as many complain about the long-winded bureaucratic processes the EU has, it actually allows for healthy investment projects based on sound feasibility studies. So I guess the receiving countries of such investment would be in a good place once they accept it. But it is important to know that these, as always with especially EU funding, it comes with a whole slew of strings attached.
And speaking of those strings, the EU said that the Global Gateway Project emphasizes a value-based and transparent approach. But would countries be interested in this? After all, the appeal of the BRI was that it didn't involve trade-offs on human rights or governance standards.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So I guess the proof is in the pudding, as they say, right? So we will see how Global Gateway is kind of moving on from here, whether there's much demand. So for now, I think I said at the beginning of our conversation that those are projects that are partly already ongoing, right? So you can see there is quite a bit of an uptake rate. But of course, the European Union is a normative actor and will remain a normative actor. It's in the DNA. You cannot expect anything else of the European Union. And I personally think that a value-based approach to pretty much every foreign and investment policy is a good thing per se, right? So the question is, can we reach some sort of compromise between what the maximum demands of the European Union and what is actually feasible on the ground in particular countries, right? And our experience so far with European investment, but also with free trade agreements and so forth that come with the same sort of value strings attached, right? Has been received actually quite well, because those are not essential European values. Those are human values, right? I mean, who wants to exploit workers? Nobody, right? Who wants to rape the environment and cause ecological damage, right? No one. So the proof is really in the pudding, in a sense that we will see what companies will actually implement EU projects on the ground and to what extent will they respect demands on say, fair compensation for workers, general labor rights, feasibility studies as to ecological sustainability and so forth.
Are there specific countries or regions that are expected to be targeted under this program?
It's difficult to predict the future, of course, and we will see where they're going from here. But my experience would suggest that they focus on, of course, on Eastern Europe, especially the non-EU Eastern Europe. We're talking the Western Balkans, for example, that kind of area, which is in the more extended European neighborhood. We would look at Africa, of course, where the European Union has strong strategic interests, right, pertaining to of course terrorism, but refugee countries of refugee origin and so forth, where they are having some issues, and then we're looking towards Asia. I think Southeast Asia for the European Union is a bit of a saturated market, I guess. I mean, they have invested quite heavily in Southeast Asia and continue to do so. Whether this will translate into more infrastructure development than is already ongoing, I doubt so. So I would presume it will be focusing on South Asia, especially where in areas where the BRI does not penetrate. At least I would suggest, if anybody would ever ask me, that they go to those areas where the BRI does not penetrate that deeply. For instance, name India, right? Very reluctant usually to accept BRI investment.
Friedrich, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Dr. Friedrich Klein from the Center for Multilateralism Studies at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, giving us a lay of the land on what the EU Global Gateway Project is aimed at and whether it'll have any impact. The jury's still out on that. We're going to be following this as things develop.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.